Let's open our Bibles then. We are in chapter 12 of Luke's Gospel, and Jesus is in the last 6 months of his public ministry. And he's been taking the Pharisees to task, talking about their hypocrisy, which he's likened to leaven because they're pretending to be something they're not, and they're all puffed up. And he's told those listening that we are worth more than many sparrows, so much in fact that even the very hairs on our head have numbers. And he's also spoken about the unpardonable sin, which today amounts to dying without accepting Jesus, because once you do that, there's no way back. And he's also said that a man's life doesn't consist of the abundance of the things that he possesses, so beware of covetousness. And it's in that vein that he continues in verse 22 today, which says this. Luke 12, verse 22. And he said to his disciples, "Therefore I say to you, take no thought for your life what you shall eat, neither for the body what you shall put on. The life is more than meat, and the body is more than raiment. Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap, which neither have storehouse nor barn, and God feeds them. How much more are you better than the fowls?" So Jesus begins now to challenge us on the way we should live, because God hasn't given us everything as possessions. He's given them to us to enjoy. You know, the birds sing because they don't have to pay taxes or fill up their wardrobes or paint their houses. They simply enjoy what God gives them. And the question is, do we do the same? You see, Jesus throughout the scriptures he never condemns wealth. Abraham, I mean, he seemed to be a really wealthy man. It says he had overabundance of gold and silver and cattle and goods. But he never built a mansion. He always lived in a tent. It says he was a man of the tent and the altar. The tent defined his relationship with this world. The altar defined his relationship with the next world. He lived in a tent because he found, it says, no continuing city here. So he was not holding on to very much at all. And he built an altar because he knew the shedding of blood was the thing that was providing an entrance into the next world. Again, Joseph was also a very wealthy man. So were Daniel and David and Solomon. Yeah, wealth is not condemned, but it's the love of money that's the problem. When you are possessed by your possessions, instead of simply enjoying them and allowing God to use them for the rest of your life, when you worship them and it becomes idolatry, then you have a problem. So we look at that, you know, and we might say, well, okay, Lord, what do you want me to do then? Just go sell everything? Well, that's what he's talking about here in these verses. He says here to his disciples, his learners, and that's all of us this morning, take no thought. And it's take no anxious thought what you shall eat, neither for the body what you should put on. The life is more than meat and the body is more than raiment. He's saying, first of all, as a Christian, your life should not be characterized by anxiety. We just saw in the previous verses that there was this guy who spent his life storing up stuff. And he built bigger barns to store it all in. But Jesus is saying to us that our security lies in something different than that. For you and I, life, he says, is more than feeding it and clothing it. The purpose of life is not so that we can just sit here fat and happy. He says life is so much more than that. It's not just about dressing it up and stuffing it. There's more to life. And when it comes to that, we shouldn't be filled with anxiety. God hasn't given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And by the way, in Matthew's gospel at this point, Jesus says, take no anxious thought for tomorrow. Here it says, for your life. And you know, if you start worrying about tomorrow and are anxious about your health all the time, well, that characterizes worry. Because we can only live in the present, if you haven't noticed. We can only live in the present. You can't live in the past. A lot of people do that. A lot of Christians do that. They are tortured about something they did a long time ago, or something perhaps somebody did to them. And unless you get in a time machine, you're not going to go back and fix that, are you? And if you did, you might change history. You know, you saw the film, you can't do that. But people are tortured by the past, and you cannot change that. Everything that is important to you is in your life that's ahead of you. The kingdom, heaven, reunions with loved ones. All that's important to us lies ahead of us, but we can only live in the present, can't we? We can't live in the past, and we can't live in the future either. Now, the thing is, worry feeds on the future. What if this happens? What if that happens? What if this happens? What if I get this? What if I catch that? I got this pain here. It's one of the 7 signs of cancer. I saw it on TV. And you know, some people are just so driven by worry that their blood type is B negative. And they get ulcers about things that might happen. You know, I heard a story about a guy in this town, and people used to make fun of him because all he did was worry. He worried about this and he worried about that and he worried about this, and he was always upping his insurance and he was going to the doctor getting pills for this and pills for that. He never stopped. He worried about everything. His hair was falling out. He was just, you know, the guy was an absolute mess. And all of a sudden, they started to see this guy walking around town, and he was singing and whistling, and he was just as happy as a lark. And finally somebody said to him, you know, what is going on with you? We haven't seen you like this for years. And he said, well, you know, you guys always told me that I used to worry about everything, and I couldn't handle it anymore, so I hired somebody to worry for me. And he works 16 hours a day. He sleeps, but then when he wakes up, he starts worrying for me. And the other guy said, well, that's crazy. Who would do that? And he said, well, I don't know, but look, I'm paying him £500,000 a year. The guy said, £500,000? How do you manage that? You only make £40,000 a year. And he said, that's his worry. But you know, some of us, we're just driven by worry, right? Jesus says the ravens, they neither sow nor reap, which neither have storehouses nor barn, and God feeds them. How much more are you better than the fowls? And which of you, with taking thought, and it's actually, I put it in brackets here, but it's anxious thought, that kind of worry. Which of you, taking thought, can add to his stature 1 cubit? In other words, you can't worry yourself taller, can you? You can't do it. I think you might be able to worry yourself shorter, but you can't worry yourself taller. And it's interesting because most scholars, by the way, think that he's talking about adding a cubit to the span of your life. It can either mean span or length. But nobody ever worried themselves into a longer life, did they? There have been people that have worried themselves to death, but they've not worried themselves a longer life. And you know, it's interesting. There was a report from a specialist clinic, and they were talking about heart problems, actually, and they said, we're a fibre-crazed people. You know, we need fibre. We're lowering cholesterol. We're doing all this stuff, and we're drinking all this stuff, and we're keeping ourselves moving, and we're trying to get our cholesterol levels down. And they said, you know, 90% of heart problems could be alleviated if we could alleviate stress. Even with cholesterol, if we could alleviate stress. Jesus said nobody ever added to their life by worrying. Verse 26. If you then be not able to do the thing which is least, Why take you thought for the rest? If you can't add one more step to your life by worry, why worry about everything else? It's pointless. Pointless. Verse 27, consider the lilies, how they grow. They toil not, they spin not, and yet I say to you that Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. If then God so clothed the grass, which is today in the field and tomorrow is cast into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? Now, this is a really interesting passage here as we read this. In Matthew, he says, consider the sparrows. And there are places in Israel, particularly in the springtime, where the hills are literally covered in sparrows and lilies. And you can imagine Jesus just sitting there saying, consider the sparrows. Well, wherever he is at this point, evidently there are ravens there, because he's just picking out what's in front of them. And so he says, consider the ravens. And now he says, consider the lilies. And it's an interesting picture he gives here, because if you are a person that is worn down by worry, by fear, by anxiety, Jesus, who is the great physician, makes out a different prescription here. And it's free. You ought to try it. Consider is actually is a Greek word that means to learn thoroughly. So it's learn thoroughly from the ravens and the lilies. If you're a worrier and you're going out of your mind and you're fearful and you're anxious and you're getting ulcers, look, there are professionals, and thank God for them. But try this too. Go sit in the park, not for a couple of hours, not just for a single day. Go sit somewhere where there are some birds and flowers around you, and sit there until you learn thoroughly, and watch them. Watch them. And see if you spot any of the birds out there with a little tractor driving along planting, putting seed in the ground, and then coming through with a combine harvester harvesting. And see if you can see any little bird barns up there in the trees where they're storing their grain. And, well, see, what the Lord is saying is, how much more value are you than they? Because he's going to say, your father, not their father, your father, if he cares for them, what will he do for you? And learn thoroughly from them too. Don't just walk by them and give them a passing glance. You know, for your worrisome hearts, and for mine too, it would do you a world of good. And it's Jesus who says it, and he is the great physician. Go sit by some flowers someday and take your time and study at them. Look at the texture of them and look at the colours and smell the perfume. Look at the beauty of them and learn thoroughly from them. If he so clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is burned, how much more will he care for you? Don't just stare at them for a minute and say, oh, this ain't working. Sit there for a while. Learn thoroughly. Consider. Learn thoroughly from them. If he puts that much care into a sparrow or a crow or into a flower, what is he able to do with you? And they don't just sit around, do they? It isn't as though a sparrow kind of leans on a branch or the crow and he opens his mouth and says, okay, God, drop some food in there, would you? No, that they make appropriation of what God has for them. The idea is that there's sustenance and there's things around. The lily draws nutrients from the ground. The soil is there because God placed it there. There's a system. Sure, there's some work that needs to be done. The birds go and gather, but the idea is, you know, you don't see sparrows with bald heads from worrying, do you? Oh no, what happens if there's no food this year? What are we going to do? It's not happening. But they don't just sit around, they work, they fly around. And you do the same thing, don't you? I mean, when you're hungry, you don't sit by the fridge and think, come on, come on, open up, come on, that sliced ham, I want it to just float right out of there onto the table in front of me, come on. Bread, come on, out of that cupboard. No, you don't sit there and think like that, do you? You know, some people do that with a job. Well, if the Lord wants me to work, the phone will ring. And they just sit there. Well, why don't you try that with your next sandwich? You know, if the Lord wants me to eat, the food will come right out of the fridge and land on my lap. You pretty quickly abandon that theory then, because you get right in there and you take it out of the fridge. Well, you see, the lilies of the field and the birds of the air, they don't just sit around, and neither should we, because God in his goodness has made a means for us to eat and to be clothed. Or maybe he hasn't promised everything that the worldly people pursue in their wealth, because that still leaves them empty. But people who worry, Jesus says, never even see the world around them. They're so busy worrying. They never even see the birds and the flowers. They're blinded by fear and worry. Jesus prescribes, go sit for a while. Relax. Have a look around. Take it all in. And think, if God so clothed the grass of the field and takes care of the birds of the air, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? Verse 29, and seek not what you shall eat or what you shall drink, neither be you of doubtful mind. Seek not. Don't make a point of going after what you shall eat or what you shall drink. So does this mean we're not to queue up at the drive-thru anymore, and we've got to keep out the drinks aisle at the supermarket? Well, you see, God knows what you have need of, and his purpose is not to restrict you, but you need to understand that God knows what's best for you at all times, and his purpose is actually to liberate you, both now and eternally. What he's actually saying here is in the context of this whole passage, so it's, don't worry about what you shall eat or what you shall drink. Don't be of doubtful mind. Don't let your mind be full of doubt. Because who are we doubting? He says you're doubting your Father. You're doubting the one who puts a much higher value on you than the grass of the field or on the birds of the air. For all these things, he says, do the nations of the world seek after. And your Father knows that you have need of these things. But rather, seek you the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added unto you. He wants to take us from being the rich fool who thinks that his security is in what he can amass in this world of wealth, to a wise investor, someone who is living their life for God and laying up treasure eternally and trusting in him. He says, if you trust in me and if you serve me and you seek my kingdom first, all of these things will be added to you. Now, I didn't say it. He said it. God's not going to forsake you. He's your Father. And he says, for all these things do the nation of the world seek after. And your Father knows that you have need of these things. Fear not, little flock. For it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Isn't it interesting? It's only here in the New Testament. Little flock. For it's your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. And he's not giving it grudgingly. You see, the world we live in is engaged in commerce, isn't it? We're surrounded by it. Half of the world will spend everything it has on building a better mousetrap, while the other half will go to the ends of the earth to buy it. That's the way the world works. The problem is, both groups are forgetting that there is a God in heaven, and all that men and rather that men and women have an eternal soul. All men and women will one day stand before the awful presence of God, stripped of the stuff that occupied their life on earth, and they will have no treasure up there. They lived without God and they will die without God. which is why we need to, before we do anything else, seek God. If we do that first, he himself says that all things will be added to us. So we're not to worry. We're not to worry, because it's his good pleasure to give the kingdom to us. And it is so important to remember that. And it makes perfect sense. What doesn't make sense is we get caught up in the world of commerce and forget about God altogether. That is just stupidity. Because our 70 here on this earth will be gone in a flash. But eternity is going to last forever. And he says it's good pleasure to give us the kingdom. It pleases him to supply for those who trust him the things they need for this journey. And he says it's twice because he's your father. And you know, I get the idea as I read this that he's much more interested in raising children than he is in raising theologians. He doesn't say your professor who's in heaven, does he? It's his pleasure to give you the kingdom. See, I think that he's encouraging us in a childlike faith here. I mean, our children don't worry, do they? They're not at home saying, oh, you know, we don't know if Dad's going to pay the gas bill this month. And there's been food in the fridge, but with Dad, you never know. If he gets in one of those moods of his, you know, he may let us starve. You know, they don't think about, they don't worry about things like that, do they? They look in the fridge and it's full of food and they say there's nothing to eat. You know? And they look at their wardrobe and they say there's nothing to wear. You know, Mark Twain once said, raising children is like being pecked to death by a duck. Think about it. But Jesus is saying to us, your Father. Your Father. So he's putting it in terms that we understand, because we all have been someone's child, right? And hopefully we've all been in that situation where we had parents that loved us, and we can equate to what Jesus is saying here. And some of us are parents ourselves, and we know what it's like ourselves to love a child. And those are the terms that Jesus chooses to use to take this idea of how we should live and couch it in those terms of a parent-child relationship. And he says, he's your father. It's his good pleasure to give you the kingdom. You can serve him. You don't have to live trying to amass physical wealth for yourself, worried about where your next meal is going to come from or how you're going to live. If you seek him first and you seek his kingdom first, it is the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom and add all of the things that you need in your life to you, instead of being nail biters. Seek first. You need to give him your undivided attention. You don't need to be doing anything else while we're in his word this morning. That's wrong. You owe him that. And he's going to say now, sell what you have and give alms to the poor. Now, need to understand, this is not a law, because what he's doing here is he's contrasting this with the rich fool. So verse 33 says, sell that you have and give alms. Provide yourselves bags which wax not old, a treasure in the heavens that fails not, where no thief approaches, neither moth corrupts. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Now, as I said, he's making a contrast here of the rich fool in verse 21, where it said, so is he that lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. The rich fool who built up a fortune and takes nothing with him. Sell that you have and give alms, he says. Care for the poor, the less fortunate. Provide yourselves bags which wax not old, a treasure in the heavens that fails not, where no thief approaches, neither moth corrupts. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So look, what he's saying is, you can't take it with you, but you can send it ahead. People who just build a fortune here on earth die and they don't take it with them. It says in the book of Ecclesiastes that sometimes the problem is A father who's a hard worker, works his whole life and he amasses wealth, and then he dies and leaves it to his son in his will. But his son is a fool and he just wastes it all. The Bible says you can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. You can invest it in the kingdom today. Not just your wealth, but your life, your attitude, your willingness to help someone else, your willingness to lay down your life for someone else, to go the extra mile to help somebody. Send it ahead, because there you have bags that don't grow old, and you have treasure that's never corrupted, because it's in heaven. And if you live that way, he says, where your treasure is, that's where your heart and where your worries are. Let's bow our hearts to pray.